Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcata Economics on Tuesday, November 11th, just after 2 o'clock p.m., where we have more wild things happening in the world, certainly in the metals markets, where we had another day of rallying early this morning, reversed somewhat in the last couple of hours. And we'll touch on that, as well as an update on what's going on with the silver that went back to London. But we do have some wild comments out of the Trump administration that, well, let us just dig in and start first with a look at the pricing. Here we see the gold futures down $1 on the day. Silver is currently up 55, 60 cents. Interesting, because that was what it looked like this morning. Both the spot and futures got over $51, then came back in. Gold was up $30 earlier this morning. And if we take a look at our chart here, you can see there was a sell-off right around 8:30. You know what happens then. And similar picture in silver, although a bit more of a rebound. And this is the futures at 5091. And if you'd like to know the spot price, that is 51.05, so about 14, 15 cents. Futures still in backwardation to the spot price, and we'll touch on that a bit more when we get to the silver that went back to London. But without further ado, let us dig into the Trump administration, where apparently you might be getting a $2,000 check, which will help repay the national debt somehow. It's incredible. But let us backtrack first, because if you've been watching this channel or you read the Arcadia Gold and Silver Daily Substack, which I might add can be found at goldandsilverdaily.substack.com or by clicking in the link in the description field below, you know that I've pointed out how several times in the last few months, whether it was Bessent or Trump, and they're making these statements and saying inflation is falling, there's no inflation, and I'm wondering, do they have a different set of data? Because obviously, the CPI and the Fed's preferred measure called the PCE, you know, let's say it's generous to call these generous metrics. You can take a look at John Williams' shadow stats or the Chatwood Index, which actually make your calculations based on things people buy rather than subtracting them out. But nonetheless, even with some freedom in those numbers, they still show that. Here he says inflation is falling. Well, as Warner Wolf said, let's go to the videotape, or better yet, to the charts. And here we see PCE price index year over year. And you can see they're steadily rising. I mean, maybe, I don't know, if we were back in July, you could say it was falling for a month or two. But that doesn't look like it's falling. Although, if you're saying, wait, let's strip out food and energy, get realistic about these things in a governmental sort of bizarre logic type of way, and look at the core PCE, well, you can see the same darn thing right there, too. So, if you're saying, all right, well, Bessent and Trump, they don't like the Fed and like their gauges of inflation, let's give them what the people are looking at. And here is the CPI index, which you can see is also rising instead of falling. And I don't know, maybe Bessent and Trump are looking at the core PCE, which ticked a 1/10% down last month, although still higher than a couple of months ago. So I don't know, even under the kindest assumptions, I don't know that you can look at any of these charts and say that it's falling. Although apparently what you could do is look at those charts and just say that it doesn't exist at all, which is pretty much what Trump said here. And there we go. Going wild on Truth Social, and a hat tip to Craig Hemke. I saw this in his column last night and had a fun email exchange with Craig. He seems perplexed too, but let us read what President Trump said. People that are against tariffs are fools. Well, okay. I will cite what Luke Gromin is fond of saying, that basically when the bond yields surge after the reciprocal tariffs, basically they've changed their plans multiple times since then. So if he's asserting here that they just threw the tariffs on, it worked, everything's good to go, I would disagree with that, but Anyway, we are now the richest, most respected country in the world. Let's stop there. We're the most indebted country in the world. Richest, not sure by which metric he's making that statement, but when you have gold and silver soaring, because even the mainstream realizes at this point that the debt can't be repaid. Outside of one method, which will probably make you smile before we wrap this one up. I don't know how you call that richest. I mean, that's like the guys down in Miami that got two Lambos on leveraged credit is the richest guy in Miami. Who knows? But anyway, most respected country in the world. That's a tough one because I live in the US and I care about my country, although I think there's a lot of countries in the East right now that are making infrastructure to not have to deal with this anymore financially. I don't know what the respect level is there. I don't think the respect from China after the way things have been handled is particularly high. And just before get the venom spewing, I had someone on Twitter when I was talking about some of these things last night. I say, well, where were you for the last 4 years when Biden was here? Biden was a disaster too. So, not comparing sides, but anyway, most respected country in the world with almost no inflation. So let's go back to the charts here because you can see on all these metrics. So the Fed claims that 2% is, the right amount of inflation to have. So perfect that 2% level is that Jerome Powell back in May talked about how if we should happen to fall below 2% temporarily, he's ready to make sure he takes care of that shortfall, which means that basically they're raising the target. And in either case, I might add also Paul Volcker and Greenspan both said that was BS. 2% was not made an official mandate until Bernanke came in, and he did that after he finished doing QE2. So maybe consider the source there. And in either case, almost no inflation, even with that 2% mandate, if that's somehow good. We haven't been there since 2021, and we're now closing out 2025. So I have a feeling that many of the constituents and people living in the country feel there's been plenty of inflation. I might add my the Nibbles dog food that we get at Publix down here in Florida. They did just raise the price on that again about a month or two ago. So maybe they don't count dog goods, but no inflation 4 years since, and it still can't get back to the Fed's 2% target. And I might add, they're cutting interest rates while Trump and Bessent are going to get someone in here who's going to cut even faster than Powell. Here is the core PCE, also well above 2% for 4 years. Same with CPI, almost got down to the mandate. Here, you look at the core CPI, that one's not even close, that can barely even get below 3%. So almost no inflation. Bessent saying inflation is falling. And I don't know the answer to this question I'm about to ask, but especially given that, A, Bessent is known as a financial genius. So it's difficult to believe that this is just, whoops, and check the numbers in a couple of months. I didn't realize it was actually going up. That's kind of hard to believe. Scary if it's the case. So also, at the same time, they're making these statements to basically get people to get on board with what they want to do. So, if those statements are blatantly false, like at what point does that become fraudulent? If you just keep repeating something that you know is not true, I don't know where the boundary is on that, but at least that's what I wonder when I hear stuff like this. Almost no inflation and a record stock market price. Okay, well, that part actually is true. 401ks are highest ever. A couple of months ago, I think he said that we shouldn't look at the stock market as the barometer of success. So that's changed again here. But here's where it gets really wild. We're taking in trillions of dollars and will soon begin paying down our enormous debt of 37 trillion. That one, I gotta see that. Because it looks like they've just been adding and adding a lot, just like every other administration, especially in the past 30 years, has added a lot. Record investment in the US, that's at least reasonable. Plans and factories going up all over the place. Here's the thing. I understand that if you want to bring manufacturing back here, you're going to have more inflation. It's baked in. And even if you don't bring manufacturing back here, you're still going to have inflation because everything we've talked about for the last 7 years on the channel here. So if you want to say, well, that's what we need to do, we can't be in a situation where we're counting on China to continue to send us weapons if we want to go to war with them. All right, I can handle that, but just the tossing in the no inflation, that seems more than disingenuous, in my opinion. But in case you're wondering how they're going to keep that low inflation going, apparently a dividend of at least 2,000 a person, unless you're super high income, will be paid to everyone. And we got another post here, which really isolates the key moment. All money left over from the $2,000 payments made to low and middle income USA citizens from the massive tariff income pouring into our country from foreign countries, which will be substantial, will be used to substantially pay down national debt. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So you're getting 2,000 bucks and getting the debt paid off. And I just hope I'm here when that, I don't want to miss that. Because that seems like one of the wilder things that I've heard in my financial career. Will that go up there with Bush in 91 or whichever year Papa Bush said no new taxes and then raised taxes? Now here's now I actually could see them paying down some debt. I don't know that they will, but I could see it possible. Basically, if they revalue the Fed gold certificates to the market price and they get a cash injection and then they use some of that to pay down debt. That I could see happening. In fact, I'd go as far as to say you could say that's more likely than not at some point, possibly sooner than later. I mean, it's already been drafted in a congressional bill. So. But we're going to send out $2,000 payments, the richest country in the world, and they're going to pay down debt at the same time. And inflation is low. And that's the other thing. When you mix in, I don't know, maybe you're either getting that much tariff income that actually could be possible. But when you mix in something with almost no inflation, well, your head guy is saying inflation is falling, yet the numbers look like this. I mean, it's like, kind of okay, there's clearly one thing wrong here. I'm guessing the part about the debt getting paid down after we get our $2,000 Christmas bonus from Uncle Donald, I'll bet that's gonna end up being wrong too, but we'll check back in a few years. Leave a comment below if you can figure it out. And you think if anyone thinks that's gonna happen, please explain it in the comment field below. Because it seems incredibly unlikely to me. So, with that said, in terms of some other situations, I mentioned yesterday that Bloomberg had an article about silver going back to London after the squeeze, which was certainly interesting, although I feel there's some key things that they left out here. So, I want to take a look, go through some of these comments quickly here. Vaults underpinning the London market added nearly 54 million ounces of silver in October. An amount weighing more than 100 of UK's iconic double-decker buses, which it's certainly exciting how much it weighs. Although the problem is that as many double-decker buses that comes up to, you had the free float around 150 million, while the daily turnover is 250 million. And in terms of, okay, why is that relevant? Because you have Daniel Galley from TD Securities who wrote back in January. So this is the guy who predicted exactly what happened last month. He was saying we were walking into a silver squeeze because the daily turnover is 250 million ounces. At the time in January, the LBMA had 305 million ounces, and a lot of that silver went over to the US, has gone to India, China, other places. So If that got down to under 50 million, you add 54 million, at least according to the guy who nailed exactly what happened months in advance. I mean, it was like silver version of Babe Ruth calling his shots. And according to what he said, in fact, I'll do you one better. Let's pull up exactly what he said, because I put that in today's Substack. And here you go. From his January 2025 report. With only 305 million ounces remaining in the LBMA's free float as of December, the world's largest stockpile is nearing critical thresholds that could disrupt the market structure. This was written in January, and it describes exactly what happened last month. After all, 250 million ounces of silver have been required on average for trading on any given day over the last 5 years, leaving a critically low buffer before everyday physical transactions are impacted. So he's saying we had 305. They used 250, so we're running low. But until this silver came back, it got down to, it was in the 140s, I believe, was the lowest I saw as of yesterday. I think it was back up to 213 million. Now, after that, silver has come back, but still under the 250. So if he was worried about this being a problem when it was 305 versus 250, and now we're at 213 versus 250, doesn't seem like things are necessarily resolved. And I will stand by my belief that this is more of a patching over a temporary situation rather than fixing something. So, and I'll explain why in just a moment. Created the arbitrage opportunity. Metal came out of the vaults in US and China, went to London. And a massive increase suggests that the arbitrage has worked by pulling metal across the pond, and I agree that it has. And here you can see the inventories and how they have gone back up here. The question is, yes, they got silver, but did they get enough silver? I explained one of the reasons why when in that last segment that I just mentioned there, but here's the key part. Latest inflow of metals eased tightness in the London market, with spot prices now trading just below the New York futures. And where is the part about the... Okay, now 17 million ounces were taken out of the Shanghai Futures Exchange. We talked yesterday about how the silver came out of there, and now they're getting into the danger zone. And also, silver-backed exchange-traded funds, most of which store the majority of the metal, also saw net outflows of about 15 million ounces in October. Well, that was a really interesting note there, because often, not always, but often, the ETFs kind of follow what's happening with the price. So you had a lot of metal going into the ETFs, then you had some come out, here they say 15 million, when the price... largely on the correction when the price went from 54 back to $48. Now, this week, we've seen the silver price go back over 50, this morning over 51. So just keep in mind that those can reverse quickly. And all else being equal, if the price is rising, generally would expect metal to be going in. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. And a great reason to hit the subscribe button and the notification bell, so when it does change, that way you can know about it. And anyway, they have a quote there from Daniel Galley, and also showing that this has not been resolved. The cost of borrowing silver in London remains elevated at an annualized rate of 5%, well below the 30% peak, but still elevated. Well, if this was resolved, why is it still elevated? I would suggest because it's not resolved. Although on the positive side coming out of this, we're going to start getting the LBMA vault totals every week rather than every month, as they had previously been delivered from the LBMA. And we can actually take a look at that here. Finally got the October numbers, and you see 790 to 844. That's the 54 million ounces. This just came out might have been late last week or yesterday, but in the last couple of days. So you can see that silver has come out of there. Although let's do, for some real fun, this is what it looks like over the last couple of years. So, and this is actually pretty fascinating. You have approximately the same amount of silver now that this is for the LBMA, that they did before the whole tariff thing, and you saw the silver come out. But the reason that they're on the tighter side is because a lot of that has gone into the ETFs. See, this total counts what the LBMA has for their trading plus what is stored in the ETF. So even though those levels are similar today versus after the additions over the past month to what we had before the tariffs, because a lot more of that total that you see there is being stored in the ETF. So lastly, they note the Section 232. And again, in case you have not heard an explanation, you'll be hearing that plenty. Basically, there was a Section 232 report to determine for critical minerals what the tariff status should be. This was announced back in April that was supposed to be delivered in October, which wasn't because of the government shutdown. Yet, silver back then was not a critical mineral. On August 25th of this year, it was added to the draft list. And then last week, it was confirmed, which means now silver would be beholden to whatever the folks deciding the recommendations for Section 232 come up with, which we're still waiting for. And still seems bizarre to me if you have a critical mineral and a shortage of it that you would put a tariff on it, because at least from the economics classes, I remember that kind of have the counter effect. Although, in fairness to my critics, I did study under Jeremy Siegel at Wharton, where let's just say they were not talking free market economics, no Austrian school there. In fact, the main thing I remember was going there, and I was in my early 20s back then, and here's Jeremy Siegel at Wharton saying, I'm sitting thinking, all right, pay attention, get some notes here. And what do you say? If the economy's weak, Fed prints money. If the economy's strong, they can take some out, and that's basically it, and buy stocks for the long run. So anyway, full recap. We dig a little bit more in there with a couple of funny comments and other notes on the Substack, which is always in the description field of these videos as well. But a few last ones in terms of, if you're sitting there thinking, all right, we've seen the rally, we've seen the sell-off, seeing some return of the rally, where does that leave us? Well, I'll tell you where it leaves the Fed's, is that John Williams? Yes. I guess they could have added a new Williams. Maybe they traded a draft pick, but he's saying the Fed may soon need to expand balance sheet for liquidity needs, which seems contrary to Jerome Powell, who keeps going up there and saying the economy is strong, kumbaya, we're good to go. But I mean, they stopped quantitative tightening, they're cutting interest rates. Unless those tariff dollars start paying down that debt soon, they're going to run into an issue there as well. And just like the Trump administration has been telling you, they think the dollar is overvalued. And since they have the ability to do something about it, that's exactly what they're doing. So they telegraphed that one. And I would say that Fed Williams is telegraphing what you already knew was eventually coming, which is more QE, lower interest rates. And that's even before Trump brings in, nominates his own Fed chairman who could probably, hopefully, help with this inflation shortage that we're all experiencing. Except for when we actually buy stuff that we need to live. And, certainly when I think about people, especially older, retired on a fixed income, and just how that impacts people. Some of us are young, able to do additional income streams, but kind of hard to think about that sometimes when you think about how a lot of people are affected, that it's not the easiest position to just expand their budget for the inflation that Trump and Bessent don't be able to see. So again, now here's another one regarding the Fed, where there are reports that they have injected $125 billion of liquidity over the past week. This is coming from the Economic Times of India. I don't think they're wrong. It's interesting. I looked at the Fed's balance sheet. It does not show up there, and they don't really provide the specifics. I've not seen the specifics yet, so I'm going to dig into that. But here's Williams saying on November 7th, they may need to expand the balance sheet. And here on November 4th, at least reports that, here you go, October 31st alone, the Fed injected $29.4 billion through repos. Okay, so there you could go look at the repos. I don't have that pulled up right now, but anyway, seems like money is coming in. And based on the things that are happening, there's probably going to be a lot more money coming in, let alone the fact that they feel the dollar is so overvalued. And how are they going to get the dollar to be less overvalued? Probably something very similar to what you see here and what Fed John Williams is advocating there. So that is how it's shaping up right now, and probably has a fair. I would have to think that when the president says he's going to give everybody $2,000 before repaying the debt, these prices are in the rallies we're seeing. It's not all unconnected. But nonetheless, that is what it is. You might not be able to change that, but I think the nice part in not just investing, but in life, I mean, there's the things that are out of your control and what can we do? We can focus on what is under our control. And anyway, gold and silver being one of the areas that many of us look to, certainly that I look to. And we'll continue to keep you posted here. And just before we wrap up, I would like to mention that in just a half hour, I know I'd said it was yesterday, but we'll have Jorge Ganoza from Fortuna Mining joining us to go through their third quarter earnings, which worked out quite well, especially. If I can put one highlight, well, first of all, they have nearly 600 million in liquidity. They had their all-in sustaining costs, some improvements there. And there was one other note that I wanted to highlight. Here you see they're on track for the PEA decision in at Diamba Sud in the first half of next year. And oh yeah, and the free cash flow of $73.4 million. And the oh yes, the one other thing I wanted to mention, if you look through here where they have their average realized gold price for the quarter, let's see, where was it? Well, I'll put it like this. It was a lot lower than the gold price now. I think it was about $3,500. Let's see if we can find that. All right, well, I don't see it in here, but let's just say that it was in the 3,500 range. Obviously, we're over 4,100. So that's another thing. And there we go. Realized gold price in Q3 was 3,467 per ounce. And let's take a look at the fourth quarter here. Because we were not over 4,000 to start the fourth quarter. Here we go on October 1st. It was up to 3,923, the high of that day. So, as you can see, the gold price is higher so far to start the fourth quarter. We'll see what happens for the rest of it. But either case, Jorge going to be joining us at 3 p.m. Eastern live call. Try and get some questions in there too. And anyway, that is the news for today. I sure hope you're having fun out there, enjoying a wonderful day, and appreciate you spending some time here. And hopefully, we'll see you back in a half hour.